I was going to ask you, Neil, if you were aware of the Seiko crossover with JoJo's.
Yeah, I saw that message you sent.
Oh, man. So Sierra showed me all of the watches that they made. They have one for pretty much each main character in part five. And the Diavolo, which yeah, of course, you know all of JoJo's. I don't have to tell you.
Wait. It's a watch for Diavolo? It's not like hair product?
Yeah. No, each one of the characters gets a watch. I'm sure that there will be other crossovers in the future, right? Because if I remember correctly, didn't we see that there was some sort of like Gucci crossover? Or they used
Naruto and Coach.
Oh, yeah, okay. But they had a Diavolo watch that was pretty styling as well. I think the Abacchio watch was probably one of the best looking ones as far as also being muted enough in color and design that it didn't look like you had a big sparkly ass anime watch on your wrist.
I guess it would be Doppio that would have the hair product, right?
Doppio, yeah.
As opposed, you know what I mean. This obviously,
yes, I know what you mean, and I don't want to spoil anything.
Right. But as soon as I saw that watch, I started thinking like Doppio needs a hair product that will make your inside bangs glisten and shine.
Inside bangs?
I mean, yeah. This isn't much of a spoiler just to talk about his power. To kind of talk about it. He has a
he has a foresight ability, and it like appears the way that they do it artistically is his bangs, like on the inside of his bangs, there's like a little frame or a mirror into like the future outcomes. Like he's using divination with the inside of his bangs artistically. And so he can like see what's coming next through the back end of his bangs, like a heads up display. Or I guess, sorry, an HUD, a hairs up display.
Hairs down display.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, he's got an nice HDD.
I'm looking at the topic list right now, and I think we're going to go long if we don't start immediately.
Yeah, we're stacked for content, but there's also some stuff I can dial back on.
There's a content list?
Some of us do our homework before the recording, Cookie.
There's homework?
So welcome back to Fancy Ramen. This is episode 138. I'm Neil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
What? I'm kind of not sick anymore. I've got cough drops in case I start going into a coughing fit. But other than that, I'm doing much better.
And make sure if you do cough, you get that like good deep grit into the mic.
There might be phlegm if I cough.
Well, that's why we have the. That's why you have
good,
a foam
moist
cover.
Phlegm.
I don't though on this one. It doesn't matter though. Anyways, what have you guys been up to this week?
Got a new phone. Been playing Pokemon and trying to figure out if I'm gonna make the deep dive into a Souls like game. In the form of a Star Wars.
Oh, okay. I find that claim dubious at best, but I haven't played the game yet.
I'll say Souls-Light in the same way that Sekiro is Souls-Light.
Except Sekiro actually looks challenging, but mechanistically clean. And when I watched the demo trailers for that game, it looked challenging, but not from the standpoint of being intentionally challenging as much as like clumsy, or they just had whoever was doing the demo was very bad at the game that they developed,
which happens.
Yeah,
but yeah, trying to make that decision, and in making that decision got a new phone. I'm a note boy now.
He's a note taker, but he still didn't know there was homework.
Exactly. But yeah, I picked up the Galaxy Note 10 Plus and the Aurora, which is just nutty if you've never seen that shine in real life.
It's a mirror, at least from what I can tell.
On video, it is a mirror, but like it's got this weird rainbowy sheen to it at some angles that is just super ballstastic.
Is it like
life.
Pearlescent then? Would you describe it that way?
Yeah. quite literally. Yeah, it is very pearlescent.
That's pretty cool. I like that a lot.
So I'm rocking that with the clear case. What have you been up to, Scott?
I went and did a double feature at the movies last night. Went and saw Jojo Rabbit, which we talked about a little bit already. Good, funny movie. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Don't know if there's much to say about it that we didn't already, though. But the second film I saw was Parasite.
Request?
Yes.
No spoilers?
I will not spoil this. Okay. I refuse to spoil this film because this is the best film I've seen in 2019. I think it's pretty much hands down. I really enjoyed Jojo Rabbit. And then after finishing Parasite, I turned to Sierra and I was just like, what are the chances I see a movie that I like and then I watch it just get blown out of the fucking water by the next movie I watch? I think Parasite is a phenomenal film, and I won't spoil anything about it, but it is just like so well made. I'm still excited about it. It's also one of those films that because it is, I would say it's primarily like tense or a thriller in a lot of ways. It is just like gut-wrenching at times with how intense the film gets. And so it's one that had me like squirming the whole time I was watching this. Like, I couldn't sit still watching this movie because it was so impactful. Everything about it's great. And it's hard to talk about without any sort of spoiler, but the basic premise is that...
Wait, can I say something before you give us the basic premise?
Yeah, please go ahead.
For the Fancy Ramen listeners who come to us for the anime, this is not Parasite the anime, nor does it have anything to do with the Parasite the anime. Because I was very excited when I heard
Parasite the anime.
There's a Parasite movie? Hags, yeah, I love that anime. And then I saw the trailer for this and I was like, this is not that.
So Parasite with a Y, Parasite the Maxim, that anime is very good. So for our anime audience, if you haven't watched that show already, you might as well. It's like 24 episodes and it's a very interesting premise. Really, really good. Neil, you're making a sour face. Did you not enjoy it?
I just looked up Parasite the anime, and you know how Google has videos displayed at the top usually, or after any sort of sponsored
links?
Oh,
so yeah, you probably saw some of the disturbing animation that exists within Parasite.
Which had like a fish-like mouth open up full enough to consume a guy's head, and I think I kind of checked out.
It's good like that.
Yeah, if you can't handle Resident Evil 4's like Ganados body horror that happens, then Parasite is not for you at all. But if you do, if you want some nostalgia to the old like internal parasites of Resident Evil 4, there's actually some like design overlap there that I appreciate.
I'll watch Saw.
It's a good show.
Every single day I'll watch like the most horrible movies and I'll play like the most horrible 3D rendered games, but when it comes to like gore and 2D looking colorful ass anime, for some reason it makes my stomach churn. I don't know why.
I could say for it being like a not actually like in incredibly intense or like gory show, the ways in which there are gore in Parasite with a Y are enough that if you've got kind of a weaker stomach, it might be one to take a pass on. But that's neither here nor there. Back to Parasite with an I, the South Korean movie, also known as Gisangchung. I believe that is how you pronounce it. But once again, my Korean experience is 0%. The super, super basic premise that spoils nothing about the movie is... that a like rich South Korean family is in need of a new tutor, an English tutor for their daughter, as their current tutor will be studying overseas for a while. And so the tutor recommends a like old friend of his who is just as good of a candidate to be an English tutor for the, I think it's the Park family. Yeah, the Park family is the rich family, the Park family's daughter. And because he trusts this friend of his, he essentially lets him in on scamming the family that he's actually a college student who's doing this and not just like a very poor down on his luck guy. And the film progresses from there with the new tutor kind of in integrating his family in with the Park family so they can somewhat like earn a living and escape poverty off of the like immense, almost disgusting wealth of the Parks. And of course the scheme, you know, progresses from there. And that's as far as I'll take it. Just the tension of that alone, it like them trying to avoid being found out makes for a good movie. But the director, Bong Joon-ho, has just like amazing timing with everything that he does. It's a super, super lean like film and script. There is not like a second wasted. And the amount of story progression that occurs and just all of the like artistic elements that he's able to squeeze into these like very quick shots are insane. It's sort of a sensory overload at some points, but it's really phenomenal. And the thing that I enjoy most about it is that when I talk about it being such a lean film, it's just like things that seem like they're just throwaway flourishes to presentation later come back maybe an hour or an hour and a half later in the film at times as another like Chekhov smoking gun. And it's just like there are so many little like nods to the very beginning of the film and all of this setup by the end of it that makes it just feel like you don't have a chance to ever catch your footing, and there's all of these nods to things that like should have tipped you off or like suggested. I don't know. I am trying to think of the best way to describe it. It's when you read a Sherlock Holmes novel, right, and then you read it again and you see all of the like hints and clues and information that was there the first time that just wash right by you until you have the greater context or you understand the story at the end. I think that the movie does a phenomenal job with that, but also its discussion of like class and wealth dynamics is very, very good and interesting as well. I just think it's a phenomenal movie for the times.
So is this going to be the Korean version, Korean People's Get Out?
It's not.
Sorry, I hate to like ask that question, but
it's. I think it's just so hard. Let's go back to Scott has 0% knowledge of like Korean culture and whatnot. I enjoy bulgogi and kimchi, and I think I know like 3 words in Korean and maybe 1 phrase from an old coworker of mine. And besides that, like, I have zero knowledge or context or expertise, so I can't make a huge comparison. But I would say like the idea of like race relations and dynamics in the United States is, I think, near impossible to like translate to anywhere else in the world as I know it. I don't know, maybe like I don't even know if like South Africa even has like a similar experience with like race and class relations to what we have in the United States. But this is very much because it is South Korea, and they're a very like ethnically or racially homogenous culture. It's a much starker distinction just between like class and wealth and nothing really beyond that, which I think Get Out is tackling a more complex relationship.
Okay, well, let me rephrase my question then.
Okay.
So Get Out there's kind of like the famous thing, anytime a non-black person meets a black person for a while after Get Out, they always had to mention Get Out because it was a thing. Is this going to be a thing for anyone for anyone that's basically Korean at this point? It's going to be like, oh, did you see Parasite?
Oh, okay, okay. I didn't understand that it was like, if I had first met you and Get Out came out, and I was like, oh, a black person, I can say, hey, did you really like Get Out? Because I did, because I'm an ally. Like, say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that type of thing.
I have no idea. Honestly, I have no clue. What I do know, though, is I've only seen two South Korean films, Parasite being number two, Burning being number one, and both of them have been just fantastic. And so I don't know if it's, I was telling Sierra, I don't know if it's a filtering effect that obviously only the best movies make it to the United States in the first place, right? And so, like, I'm only able to see the best of what's being offered, but man, like, both of them were just fantastic. And I'm still so excited about Parasite after seeing it. I'm wondering if I should look into more like
Korean cinema.
Yeah, I guess this director, Bong Joon-ho, has also worked on Snowpiercer, The Host, and Okja.
Ooh, Okja. The Host. That's something I've seen.
I have not seen The Host. I've heard about Snowpiercer, but I haven't seen it. And I've had someone recommend Okja to me. So I think what I'll probably try and do is like delve into his back catalog a little bit. But I think this guy is just like, he's just like a killer director / screenwriter. Metacritic ranked Bong 13th on its list of 25 best film directors of the 21st century. So it could just be that this guy is like one of the top artists in his craft. But Parasite is a phenomenal film. I don't think anyone should pass on seeing it. It's very, very good.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. That's all I did. I mean, that's all I did for the weekend that's fun to talk about. I'm still just loving Parasite. And Jojo Rabbit was also funny and heartwarming and upsetting all at once.
I know, right? That one scene where he's just like, ooh, butterfly. And then it's like, oh, no.
As soon as, yeah, I mean, I knew. There's good foreshadowing in that movie for sure. I liked what Taika Waititi did with it as well. It's just sometimes I think the emotional beats are sometimes undercut a little bit by his propensity to interject humor at every single point. And so sometimes when I felt like there was a very like where I was like, there's only one point in the movie where I was tearing up or like having an emotional response that then didn't have any humor associated with it. And so like I felt the full force of that moment, but there were other times where I would be like in the middle of feeling some more substantial emotion. And then there would be like a gag or kind of a one-off joke that occurred. And I don't know. It just kind of, it like brought the temperature down on that emotional response then. Like I felt less upset or uncomfortable. And I think that for the most part, it was still a very good movie, but there were maybe a couple of times where the humor was great, but it just, it maybe kept me from going somewhere that would have been effective in the storytelling of the movie.
I could definitely see that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy JoJo's and his friends kind of...
Him and Yorkie?
Yeah, him and Yorkie.
That's the best friendship I've seen on screen in a long time. His little friend stole the show. Yorkie, I don't think, had a single line that was a dud. Like, Yorkie is one of the funniest companions I've seen in a movie in a long time. Whether
most
it's
definitely.
Whether it's his paper suit just like being ripped to shreds progressively, or
it's paper like.
I think it was cardboard. I was looking closer.
It was very corrugated cardboard.
For context, his buddy who does not get discharged from the Hitler Youth and instead gets enlisted into like the active military in the area, they don't have any clothes for him, so they put him in essentially a cardboard like Nazi uniform. And so as he's out at war, it's like getting shredded to bits, and so it keeps him from being identified by the Allies as a Nazi, because it like just shreds off of his body right before the Allies overtake Germany. Yeah. But that's about it. Neil, what have you been up to with all this time off to recuperate and restore yourself back to 95%?
I mean, aside from like sleeping and stuff, one of the transitioning into video games, one of the more therapeutic things I could do was travel around post-apocalyptic America with boxes on my back and boxes on my trike. Mm.
You played some Fallout 76.
Yes, I did. No, oh, it is funny that you say that, because obviously I'm referring to Death Stranding. When I went to pick up a copy of Death Stranding from our Best Buy in Omaha, one of them, I went over and saw the display for Death Stranding. And maybe I showed you guys this, I'm not sure. And in its place, I found dozens of copies of Fallout 76, the Steelbook edition, FIFA 2019, and also a Steelbook edition, it looked like. And then another game that I can't recall, but like just stacks of them in the place where Death Stranding was supposed to be. So obviously Death Stranding had sold out, and
a lot of people deciding to get these steelbooks were like, you know what? I think I'd rather be a mailman today.
Yeah. And I mean, quite frankly, part of me afterwards was kind of wondering if that was meant to be some message, because I didn't realize until I had started to actually kind of look around online about reactions and responses that this game's had like a very polarizing public response. Mm-hmm. To the extent that I recall someone telling me that Kojima was like essentially knocking on their American audience as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Basically saying that like Americans could not interpret art or something to that extent, unlike Europeans or something ridiculous like that, which I by no means support that claim, mind you.
I just watched a movie in which the Europeans were book burning, so we're at least dead even on artistic appreciation at times.
I obviously don't think that this is necessarily the best format at which I can explain what Death Stranding is. And I'm sure that's been done dozens of times before, but I do want to express like regret that people feel so strongly about this game that they have to either try and herald it as the best game of all time or do the exact opposite and like call it the worst game of all time.
Are you about to say it's pretty meh?
No, I'd say it's like on my 5-point scale so far, I'm giving it 4. It's weird because I'm going to feel very hypocritical saying this, in that like I don't think that anyone should get upset about reviews, whether it's just your coworker or your best friend, or if it's a major magazine retailer or what. But I frankly get kind of annoyed when I keep hearing people talk about Death Stranding as a walking simulator, because I feel that it's less of a walking simulator than a lot of games out there. It's just that it doesn't have the mechanics that you identify as being things that qualify games not to be walking simulators. Like, I've played first-person shooters and third-person shooters that feel more like walking simulators than Death Stranding. But because Death Stranding's like elevator pitch, which is taking packages from one place to another, doesn't give you any sort of ammunition to otherwise dispel the belief that this game is a walking simulator. Like, that's kind of what it has earned itself a reputation for. But even if you wanted to agree that this game was a walking simulator, which, I mean, I think does a disservice to walking simulators themselves, it's like there's so much more you can do in this quote-unquote walking simulator that you can't in other games. Like, when I hear walking simulator, I think of games like The Disappearance of Ethan Carter, or what is...
What Remains of Ian Fitch.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think of Gone Home. I think of Firewatch. I think of
Dear Esther.
Right,
Ooh, Dear
exactly.
Esther, good one.
And this game is way more gamey than that. From literally getting grades on your deliveries to, I mean, things that may obviously are not for everyone, but like load management and weighing the costs of carrying way too much and slowing yourself down while going through enemy territory and taking safer routes and more, you know, essentially making the route tougher and harder on your cargo, like a safer approach overall. The game can be very exciting, but a lot of the times the game allows the player to determine how exciting it is. For like the gameplay elements, it really does kind of become a picture of like what Metal Gear Solid 5 and 3 kind of were to me, which is if you want to be crazy, you absolutely can. But like, I'll be honest, Metal Gear Solid 5 and 3 were not, you know, shootout fests most of the time. It was a lot of just like watching enemies, watching them some more, mapping out their movements in my head, and then moving just at the right time so I don't encounter anyone. So I guess I just really wanted to say that like a lot of the hate that I've heard from people that haven't even played Death Stranding just reminds me of Metal Gear Solid 3 and 5. I can't say 4 because I didn't play it or I didn't watch it. I watched it technically, but I did not play it.
There is even more watching enemies in that one.
And to be quite frank, the big thing I heard about people complaining about there being so many cutscenes in Death Stranding shocked me because I had been like maybe 5 hours into the game at that point, and it has less cutscene time than than Metal Gear Solid 3, than Metal Gear Solid 2, honestly, leaning in that far into the game. So I don't know if I'm just going to get into this giant cutscene. I'm now 20 hours in, like within the next 10 hours or something. But as of right now, this game has felt very liberated of obligatory storytelling.
So I have a little bit of context from like some reviews and whatnot that I've been looking at. And the impression that I've gotten is that there is a lot of... And this may actually help prove the validity of what I've experienced, if you can chime in on it. But was there a lot of expository information at the beginning of the game, Neil?
There is, but it's very voluntary. So this is actually one of my huge complaints about the game. Metal Gear Solid 5 had tapes in which like a lot of the information that you can get, a lot of the backstory and so forth, a lot of the things that made the story actually serviceable in 5 was done through these recordings. Unfortunately, a lot of that has been put aside into records that as you uncover and do, as you expand the, essentially you're expanding the internet, basically. You are CenturyLink expanding your fiber network. That's actually the more important thing as opposed to like the box delivery. You can honestly not deliver anything for the most part.
Have you tried that? Or like you have a single, have you ever treated a mission like the football where you just have one briefcase like strapped to your arm?
Oh yeah,
and you
for
just
sure.
Gun it on a bike?
For sure. And it honestly is like, it makes things go way faster. You still have to deal with some threats, but like if you have much less cargo, you can be much more destructive in your pathing, you could say. But so this game, instead of having audio logs, they have literally just text dumps. So what I told myself going into it was that like I will probably read these at some point when I have the time, and maybe I'm multitasking or doing something else and I'll read these, or maybe I'll, instead of like reading up about you know, internet drama or esports drama, I'll read these logs. But what that ultimately equated to was me not investing any time into it. And that might actually be what has allowed me to really not be bothered by it. And I don't think it does anything negative to my experience so far with the game either. The actual thing is, it's been more, someone mentions something that I have no idea what they're talking about. And so afterwards, I look at it and I'm like, okay, that's what they meant. And it has done me perfectly fine. If I don't care about a particular topic, like how Timefall farms actually work or some bullshit like that, I'm just not going to invest my time into it. And I think that yields, at least for me personally, as someone that really does generally like to dive into the lore, it's done me perfectly well with my experience with the game, the pacing of the game, and I guess just like my experience overall. And that's also to note too that, like, I think a lot of problems people have come from this completionist mentality too. Like, they always have to maximize their time within their time or their work in a particular map or setting. And it's kind of unfairly been taught to us by other games that if you don't finish everything in one section before you move on, you've lost the ability to complete that previous map. It's sort of like the mentality of just platformers in general, where once you get done with 1-1 in Sonic, you can't go back to 1-1. So you might as well do everything you can in 1-1 before you move to 1-2. But that's not really the case in most modern games, and certainly not the case in Death Stranding. So typically when you get through an area and you connect to a hub for the first time, you absolutely can just move forward and ignore that hub for, you know, as long as you want. The game really lets you decide the pace of itself a lot. So I went through the first area relatively fast. I got into the second open area, and when I felt like I wanted to slow things down and just wanted to appreciate some of the side content, see what I could get, I then went back to the first area and then started to max out things. And once I got tired of delivering things, I went back to the second area and started continuing the story again. So there's totally a lot of control in the player's hands. And that is absolutely, it's kind of like the Persona 5 dilemma, where if you don't realize what you as a player need at a given point in time, you're going to wear yourself out doing something you don't want to do. Like, you really have to ask yourself as you're playing the game, do I really want to deliver this package, or do I want to go jump into a den of supernatural monsters, as we'll put it, and screw with them for a while? Like, if you're not able to identify that as a player, this game could be a huge miss on you, because you may find yourself trying to, like, 100% areas as you encounter them. And I don't necessarily think that is usually that fun for most people. But that is also a critique of the game. I think a game is very... it's really unrealistic nowadays because games have become more and more advanced and technical. But, like, during the earlier generations of video games, games often would deliver you or give you challenges at a good pace, so as you played through the game, you never tired of them, right? It's a lot different in an open world game. And there are certain aspects that Death Stranding does this very well in. Like, they purposely gate you off from using more advanced technology, basically, until you've overcome some of the challenges of without having it. Like, you have to go through an area without a motorcycle or a vehicle first. And after you've experienced essentially the most core aspects of traveling by foot, you suddenly have access to a reverse trike, meaning a motorcycle with two front wheels. Once you have traveled the land on the reverse trike and had to go over obstacles and shit, which is, you know, not very fun, honestly, then the game opens you up to road building. So at that point, the amount of time you actually need to drive a trike or a vehicle on dangerous terrain starts to get limited down quite a bit, as long as you are connected online and building roads together. And that's another thing too. I think a lot of a person's experience can change drastically based on when you play the game, because as I'm playing, like, a couple weeks after it was released, as the game opens up to the new technology, as I put it, I start to see a lot of the buildings that people before me have already placed. And, like, quite frankly, I think that makes my experience much better. So, it's been, like, a very sweet spot where I come across buildings or structures that are almost finished, and I just have to commit some of the resources I've picked up along the way. And suddenly I have a nice road in front of me, and now I can travel from point A to point B with hardly any trouble at all, as long as I don't get, like, sharp, as long as some sharpshooter doesn't miraculously throw a javelin and hit me off of my bike, which can be fun too, mind you. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, overall, like again, 20 hours in, I don't think I'm necessarily spending too much time doing optional stuff. It's kind of been an even mix for me. I've really enjoyed the game, but it's also very prudent to say that I'm not the type of person that has to have, this sounds really assholey, but it's not meant to be that way. I don't need violence in video games to feel entertained.
Need that violence. Need it.
But I mean, I think that is very much a qualifier for some people. And it's not to say that they're violent. It's just that violent gameplay, destructive gameplay, that could be another substitute for the word violence. It's something that's immediately interactable and easy to identify your effect on the world. It's something quantifiable. It kind of substitutes score, if you want to think of it from like a very primitive Mario experience, right? Violence, guns, killing people in video games doesn't necessarily like mean that you want to kill people or anything, but it can be a very fun mechanic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as someone that doesn't necessarily need like that sort of instant gratification from a video game, like I apparently now play a lot of visual novels. which
you are the resident expert.
Which, I mean, at this point, that's like the exact opposite of like a first-person shooter or an action game or a hack and slash or a beat 'em up or anything like that. And two of these topics of which I'll be talking about next, because in the exact opposite of like a what seems to be like a very potentially rich storytelling narrative within Death Stranding, or it might not be. I'm honestly not sure where it's going to go. I've been playing River City Girls, which is you could kind of say a spinoff or a sequel to the River City Ransom series. This one was made by, if I'm not mistaken, Way Forward. But River City Girls is basically a twist to the original River City Ransom, which is about two Japanese delinquents going after their girlfriends or girlfriends. I don't remember if one or two got kidnapped, and you have to beat up a bunch of people trying to find your girlfriend, basically. In this game, you are playing as the girlfriends, and your boyfriends got kidnapped, so you have to beat up people to get to your boyfriends, basically. It's actually, so far, been really, really fun. The writing at times is kind of garbage, but in a good way. The character designs of the animation is freaking great. I really only have like two or three complaints so far.
Mm-hmm.
The first one being that for a beat 'em up, it seems pretty unforgiving when it comes to your depth perception, if you will. I'm not the biggest fan of beat 'em ups, but I have played my fair share, especially on like the Sega platform. Streets of Rage is like one of my pinnacles of like best beat 'em ups of all time. When you compare it to something like that, it seems like when you're using weapons, you really do have to be on the exact, not necessarily pixel, but few pixels.
Three pixels, yeah.
Yeah, to
so
actually
much more forgiving.
Hit an enemy with your bat. Or a series of weapons. You really have to be in that exact depth as the enemy. But the enemy actually has a wider depth than you at times.
Hmm.
And that kind of feels not great.
I mean, that's the one thing that keeps me from enjoying beat 'em ups is getting that right.
Yeah, it definitely feels off at times. And it's strange because I think that was a conscious decision because like the bat is a perfect example of this. The bat is relatively fast, not the fastest weapon, but it's probably as fast as your regular punches.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you pick up a bat, your depth range, as I'll call it, just lowers dramatically. And it doesn't make sense from like a logical standpoint of my fist and a swing from a bat is generally going to be much wider than even a haymaker.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's easily solved just by not using weapons or not using weapons that you know suck. My second complaint is that I think a lot of the voice acting outside of the main characters is not well selected. They have Jacksepticeye voicing a reoccurring character. Jacksepticeye is like a YouTube personality, and I don't mean to attack him or anything. as a personality or a content creator. He's cool. He's fine. I've come across so many times where you run into a character and the voice just feels completely out of place for them. And this isn't a matter of localization either. I think this is an American or, you know, like an English designs and developed game. So these are the voices they intended purely for these characters as they were created or after they got people into cast. There are so many times where I come across characters that just, I don't get the voice actor. Like the voice actor doesn't really do a great job for it. It is possibly also a low budget game when it comes to voice acting, because that's really the only thing that jumps out at me as a flaw. Because outside of that, the character designs in terms of visuals, movesets, and so forth are all freaking great. There's a lot of personality between the two main characters, one being a black-haired girl who's got more spunk and bite to her, then the other one's more of like your fluffy orange-haired ponytailed girl who's kind of more of like an airhead, and like their movesets perfectly complement their personalities. Like the tempered girl has a nut shot, whereas the pony-haired girl has a dab.
And what's a dab attack?
So in this exact instance,
yeah,
the girl with the short hair that has the short temper, if you want to think of it that way, has a haymaker.
They sound like I've never watched Powerpuff Girls, which is my own problem, but they sound like Bubbles Buttercup.
Yeah, sort of.
Like that's the personality I get out of it.
And just like the Powerpuff Girls, they both still kick ass though. So that's the big thing to take away. Like it's just there's so much charm between these characters. So I wish I remember the names, but it's that inconsequential. You see them at the top of your screen, but that's about it. But the Buttercup has a haymaker. So if you just hold left or right, any lateral movement with your heart attack, she does a haymaker that knocks people away. It's a great way to deal with crowds or get away from crowds, or get crowds away from you rather.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're playing as the other girl, her over heart attack, left or right heart attack, is a dab, in which she just has a very violent but cool looking dab motion, in which she travels forward maybe like a yard or two, and like there's a, you know, some particle effects in the dab. So it's sort of like a haymaker type attack, which will knock enemies against the screen essentially, or like about two-thirds of a screen length. The third complaint I have for the game so far is that I don't think the game's very clear, and it's definitely a design decision. They don't want to be clear with what the item effects do for you, and that is like a very original River City Ransom thing. Like, you don't know what this burger is going to do, or you're not sure what this Omu rice is going to do for your health until you actually do it. Same thing with this game. It'll tell you what the effects are for an item after you buy and use it, but even then it still kind of hides some of the actually better effects. Like if I buy this burger, it's actually going to give me strength and attack +1, or maybe stamina +1 or something, but it doesn't actually track those effects, and it doesn't really do a good job of ever explaining or documenting what or how those stat buffs work, if they're temporary, if they're permanent. And while I don't necessarily need these explanations told to me, you know, like in some tutorialized fashion, the game is full of annoying ass tutorials at the start. I don't understand. I don't necessarily understand the tutorial messages and why they decided to have so many pop up for certain aspects of the game and then completely ignore them for other aspects.
Okay. Are you playing this with Tiff?
Yep. And just like any great co-op beat 'em up, you can have friendly fire. That's an option, yes or no. And you have
and of course you are using that, right?
Well, we aren't, just for our own sanity and just because it's more of a chill thing for us. But we did notice that throwing weapons can be hazardous to both parties. So if you throw a baseball and it hits someone, and then it, you know, in the recoil of the hit, flies back and falls towards you, if it touches you, you will be damaged by it. Which, I mean, that's fine. That's kind of, it's kind of goofy. I appreciate that mechanic. You also keep experience and money separately. So at times you gotta,
you can have a level 20 player and a level 14 if they're just not getting in the mix enough.
It does make me aware at times that, like, I apparently do not pay attention to money at all, because I'll be like a level up, but I have half the amount of money that she does. And overall, like, I would say it's actually a really fun game so far. Again, like, my criticisms of it so far are not that critical, and they're definitely me nitpicking what I think to otherwise be like a 4 out of 5 game.
Nice. So question, after you and Tiff finish this, are you going to play Stay Cool Kobayashi-san?
Why does that sound familiar to me?
Because he's the bad guy from River City Ransom, and he just had a game come out by Arc System Works recently.
Is this one different from Way Forward, though?
Yes, maybe.
So, because I know Arc System owns the River City, the Double Dragon, and there's another game that that is connected to this franchise. I know, like, Way Forward basically was hired on to just make this game, essentially, if you want to think of it that way. Or maybe they pitched it to him, I'm not sure. But yeah, I'm curious if it's actually the same developer, Way Forward. But yeah, I don't know, maybe. When I looked at this game, because I bought this on the Switch and I actually saw that this was also here, I immediately thought that this didn't actually look as good. But that's
Stay Cool Kobayashi-san.
Yeah, that's only from screenshots. So
no, it definitely doesn't look as good as River City Girls, but just the fact that you're the bad guy from the game kind of gives it a different twist, and I think the second player gets to be like his main henchman.
So the screenshots I'm seeing, it looks like the second player, or it looks like you can change actually, but the other player, the other character is Kunio-kun, who is the main character from the River City Ransom series.
Oh, you can also go between Kunio-kun.
Yeah, bad guy, good guy, join forces. I mean, because really at the end of the day, delinquents are all fighting the one singular enemy in the world of Japanese delinquents.
And that is the man.
The man. Fuck the man. That sums up my discussion on River City Girls. And just real quickly, in the complete opposite direction, I started Ever 17, the Out of Infinity, which is the PC version of Ever 17, which is one of the three games outside of Pepsi Man that Uchikoshi Kotaro worked on before 999, Virtue's Last Reward, and Zero Time Dilemma. Haven't gotten too far into it, maybe 2 hours in or so. It's interesting because at first I thought this was going to be a very typical, like, romance visual novel, but already by, this is his second game, if you want to think of it that way, the second game he wrote. Already by this point, it's outside of the typical, you know, romance visual novel genre, because the gimmick or the dilemma starts pretty early on. You're basically playing as characters that have gone into this underwater theme park. This has got to be set sometime in the distant future. And then the underwater theme park experiences some sort of accident, and you and six people, I think six people, we actually don't know that for sure yet, are trapped in the essentially in the ocean in what is quickly becoming an aquatic an aquatic tomb, if you will.
So it's just the Bioshock's beginning.
Yeah, basically. except there's concession stands and shit like that, I guess.
Nice.
It definitely feels like an old, you know, early 90s or late 80s game. I don't recall when it came out originally, because, like, the game only plays in 800 by 600 windows, or you can, you know, full screen it, which then gets stretched because our monitors are all 16 by 9 or wider now. I definitely feel that I'm already entering the game with hyper alert. What's the word I'm looking for? Like, skepticism? not skepticism for the story, but rather like anything that comes to pass, I'm like, oh, I bet that's part of the big twist. I bet this leads to something. But that's thanks to, you know, playing all of his other games where there's always a giant twist that just completely shocks you. But yeah, so far so good. We'll see how that goes. What have you guys been playing?
Getting a little bit further in Pokemon Shield. That's about it, honestly. And then just all the Call of Duty. There was another big patch. There's been a very large patch pretty much each week. So the game is staying balanced, competitive, and great.
Did you really get too far into all of the Pokemon criticism pre-release?
I did not get into any of the criticism. All I can tell you is the week before Pokemon came out, I was quoted saying on the podcast that the closer Pokemon gets, the less excited I am for it. And I just don't know what I'll do when it comes out or something along those lines. And I actually, the morning I bought Pokemon, I actually was like, oh yeah, Game Freak just came out with a new game. Let me go ahead and download and play that. And I downloaded Pokemon. And as soon as it booted up, I was like, this isn't Little Town Hero. Fuck. Well, guess I'm playing this now. So it's kind of a mistake buy.
Are you enjoying it to a great degree, or what's your current feeling on it?
It's nice since I've been so out of the loop of the Pokemon series for the past like three generations. So it's kind of like seeing all these new Pokemon for the first time type of thing. And the fact that it's already completely gone off the rails of the usual-ish story, which is normally you're new in town, you get to meet the professor gives you a Pokemon after you save him, you learn how to catch Pokemon, you're going to be the very best.
Your single parent mom kicks you out of the house so she can get her funk on?
Pretty much. This one is, you're not new in town, but you're new enough in town that you haven't met your best friend's older brother, who is the champion, undefeated champion of the world of Pokemon. And he actually comes back into town, gives both you and your best friend Pokemon, and then you're off to meet the professor and get your Pokedex and become the best that ever was. No Team Rocket, Team Magma type thing. I did meet Team Yell. They are just a very big fans of one of the competitors in the championship league.
They're a bunch of soccer hooligans.
Footy.
Yes,
they are basically, they do look exactly like footy hooligans. But so Team Yell, they basically, it sounds like the story is, instead of, what is it, 12 or 8 gems? Just being available to everyone to battle whenever they want willy-nilly, everything kind of just goes into like a season. So you're a challenger of this season's Pokemon Worlds, and Team Yell just happens to be a fan of one of the other contestants, and there's like 8 or 9 of you guys.
Mm.
And it's just to see who becomes the very best. Whatever Pokemon you pick, your best friend or rival picks the weaker version, and then the grand champion gets the stronger version, the stronger thing. So if you get the water Pokemon, no, excuse me, if you get the grass Pokemon, your rival gets the water Pokemon, and the champion gets the fire Pokemon, because he needs a one-up, right?
Mm-hmm. What a dick.
Exactly.
It's great, though, that your rival, or not, yeah, I'm sorry, your friend or whatever in these games always seems to get the one that you get to dunk on.
Yeah, so you just get to dunk on him the entire time. But it's good. I ended up picking Grookey because I like the way his final evolution looked. He has a big drum.
Oh, yeah. I haven't looked into any of their evolutions yet.
Swabble definitely turns out looking the coolest, in my opinion. He looks like a fucking secret agent. And Archie. They just get real skinny and sophisticated. You just imagine that they've got a freaking cigarette with a fucking cigarette holder just in their back pocket somewhere. Jewel case or some shit. Mm. The rabbit just, you know, he looks like he's a rabbit. and the monkey just gets real big. It's cool. Mm. They stay. They don't go into the fire type. Does not become a firefighting. They do stay in their respective elements. So it's just a fire, or water, or grass Pokemon at the end of the day. So I'm enjoying it. I'm just taking it at my own pace. One of my friends has already like beaten it. Is now completing her Pokedex. So as soon as I beat it, I may just start stealing Pokemon from her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's a Pokemon game. What was the controversy leading up to it?
I think there were complaints that it didn't look good enough.
Yeah,
which is normal for almost any Nintendo game, isn't it?
Well, is that okay? That could be true, but generally speaking, after release, the critics tend to shut the fuck up, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, the very specific thing I'm thinking of is Breath of the Wild. I think a lot of people were initially hesitant with character designs, might still be, but I think it's really hard to look at Breath of the Wild and say, man, this game doesn't look that good. I'm going to go back and play Skyrim.
Yeah.
But I think the most important things to note in regards to its aesthetics was that, and I say aesthetics because it's not just graphics overall, was that all of the Pokemon ended up being essentially the same models from the 3DS version, which goes completely against what they said was one of the reasons why they couldn't have all the Pokemon, you know, the National Pokédex or whatever the fuck. Dexit was another term for this fiasco.
Basically,
they confirmed it's the same models, which goes against that whole explanation there. And what was the other thing?
The other thing was like the move sets.
Yeah, the animations, the lack thereof.
Nope, yep, there definitely a lack thereof, but I'm not a Dexer, is what I'm going to coin the term for the people who want to have 100% Pokedex and do the... I can see how it becomes an issue when you're trying to get into like super breeding and making your team the very best for the Pokemon World Championships. They have those, right?
Honestly, it was daunting enough when it was 150 Pokemon.
Exactly, and now people are asking for all 792,000. I'm just like, I'll be happy with the Pokemon that I get. I will play through the story. I may battle a friend or two along the way. I'm not going to get into the competitive scene. Even so, I'm not going to complain when the competitive scene has to change, because you guys were happy when every game of Smash Bros. Didn't have them all. And then you were super happy when Smash Bros. Got all the characters. So now we're just waiting for Pokemon Ultimate Edition to come out.
True.
Or any other like competitive game, whenever the next one comes out, you obviously have to retool and re-kit. Except for in the past with Pokemon, it's been, the new competitive game came out. Cool, I'm going to tweak my team just a little bit by breeding this Charmander instead of with the Ditto. It's instead of breeding the Charmander with the Flareon, I'm going to breed it with this Snubbull or something. And it's going to give me that one move and that little bit of extra IV. It's like, no, you just got to start from scratch. Good sir. Grind it out. When in doubt, grind it out.
Do you...
That was my rant.
Scott, did you plan on getting this game before all the bad press?
Pokemon? No, probably not. Just not, I don't know, not as interested in it as other games. And since it is a $60 title, you know, if I'm going to pick it up, I want to be interested in it in a way that I know I won't just drop it in a week and a half when something else catches my attention. Because the problem I had with X and Y is I picked up X, and I think as soon as I got the legendary, I was like, you know what? I really hate Poke France. Like, I don't care for any of this. So I stopped playing the game at that point in time, and I haven't touched it since. And that's 2.5-3 years ago, I think.
I'm proud of you.
There are good Pokemon games out there that are modern or like somewhat recent too. I really, really actually enjoyed Pokemon White 2, I think. Yeah, I think I played
Racist.
Pokemon White 2. Yeah, sorry, man. I played Pokemon Black and then I played Pokemon White 2. Not not exactly the best like one to the other transition, but like that game was very fun. But I actually remember Pokemon Black. I didn't enjoy that much either.
What? So was it the hip hop music?
No, shut up. Look, man. Hey, I loved Get Out. I'm an ally. No, I think for Pokemon there are versions. Is version right? There are generations that are just hit or miss for me. One was great. I didn't get to play 2 when I was a kid, but later I played Heart Gold, and honestly, one of my favorite Pokemons I've ever played. I probably hold that up at the top as like, this is my favorite Pokemon game that I played. And then 3 was good. I never played 4, but the exposure I did get to it, I was like, ah, I don't feel bad about missing this one. 5 was fine. The 5.2, or I guess the 5.5, you know, the Black and White 2. I thought those games were phenomenal. And then X and Y felt like duds again. So it's really hit or miss.
X and Y please. The Alola region?
Oh, I didn't even touch the Alola region stuff. No, those X and Y was before that.
Those were the Hawaiian Pokemon were pretty cool. I did buy that game. Mistake. I will tell you, I love the fact that this game does have the they did bring that let's go aspect of the Pokemon are actually worming around the world.
Yeah.
So and most of the randomized encounters are gone.
I'm kind of sold on that. I never enjoyed that much about the game because I'm still traumatized by like the early childhood of just fighting 40 Zubat in a row through Mount Moon. Or
but, it's just like, I don't want to be confused anymore. Zubat uses supersonic.
I had 5 minutes to play my sister's copy of... I don't actually know if she got Sword or Shield. It was already in... The cartridge was already inserted and her Switch was out. So I played like one Pokemon battle. And I thought... I hadn't seen any of the overworld or anything. But at least the combat looked really good. And it was smooth and simple and incredibly familiar to everything I had done before. So I could be convinced to pick it up later. But at least for now, you may have actually enticed me to doing some more co-op play with Sierra and picking up Luigi's Mansion or something.
That'd be a better thing. Like, yeah. I said, I literally bought this game by mistake because I saw Game Freak and thought... I wanted to try Little Town Heroes, which was going to be really cheap. I just hit the buy button and didn't even think about it.
Oh, man, I wish I had that kind of money.
I don't have that kind of money. But there's no return policy for digital.
Scott, what have you been playing?
Not this week, but last week while we were out on sick break and whatnot, I put... probably double the amount of time into the Breach that I had when I originally picked up the game. I think it was last year in 2018, which is, as a quick reminder, a sort of turn-based tile strategy game where you have mechs fight against these like giant bug monsters in sort of a kaiju style battle. And what makes it unique from a lot of other games is in the turn base, you actually know what your opponents are going to do on their next move. So you're always thrown into the battle somewhat like under equipped, but with having the like prescient knowledge of what the next round is going to be and trying to interfere with that outcome. When I had originally played the game, I'd put in like maybe 10, 12 hours before I, you know, gave my kind of like feelings and review on it. Now that I've put about another 10 to 12 in, I've unlocked all of the different mech squads, and the variety in the game is like staggering. Just between, I'm trying to think actually how many mech squads there are. There's 8 total plus a 9th secret squad. When I had played last time, I think I had unlocked 4 or 5 of the 8. And so a lot of them were offense-based, but how they interacted offensively was different for each one. There was one that was kind of just pure damage. You had like a mortar and a tank and a giant robot that could punch. There was another one where you could like throw a rock that would also block things or pull enemies or objects with a grappling hook and then chain lightning through these like setups where you'd have adjacent units next to one another. But as I got into the higher cost mechs, which you buy with achievements, the amount of like technical manipulation of enemies and map elements becomes more and more the focus of the game and less about actually like damaging and or killing the bad guys in combat. They're, I picked up a team that, like, for instance, they just stop the enemies from executing an attack by dropping like smoke bombs and clouds. And that's pretty much the whole like strategy for the group, is not to just defeat the enemies as much as to just like get them into these like cloud areas where both the enemies and your mechs can't do any sort of like offensive, or they can't take any sort of actions whatsoever. And so you're like carpeting the battlefield at strategic locations with interfering smoke. And there's like a passive achievement where you have a unit that electrifies the smoke, so they take damage on every turn as a damage over time effect instead. And so it becomes way more about like strategic placement, where you're dropping smoke to stop one action, but to not like back yourself into a corner on the next like three or four turns of a of an encounter or a mission. It's really interesting. There's another one called the Frozen Titans that you actually are like freezing enemies and shifting their position, because one of the units you have fires a really strong projectile, but both in the direction it's pointing and the direction opposite of that. So you might want to freeze one thing so you can fire forward at it. You might want to freeze one thing so you can fire forward away from it, but also so that other projectile doesn't cause collateral damage. So like freeze a town in ice and then fire at the enemy opposite of it. So then your like backward shot breaks the ice that you just froze the town with, as opposed to destroys the power grid behind it. It's really cool. It's like playing on a chessboard, but depending on which squad you select, you could be playing with a team that's like essentially all knights, or you could be playing with a team that is like a bunch of rooks or a mix of that. And so it's been a very, very fun learning experience playing these more technical and like non-lethal mech types. I think I recommended the game last year when I played, but even getting back into it, like I just kind of fell into a rabbit hole. I meant to play it for like 2 hours, and then the day I picked it up, it was like 4.5-5 hours that I ended up sinking into it. It's a really good like short time suck too, if you need to play a 15-minute game and then save and quit, or like deviate out of it, close a screen. Seems really up Neil's alley.
I might have asked you this before, but do you think it's better than better being a subjective thing, I know, but better than FTL?
I think I personally like it better than FTL. Mostly Whoa. Because it forces you to, the things that I enjoyed about FTL, I think it expands upon in this. FTL, there are a bunch of different strategies that you can work with based upon your ships and your crews, as well as the regions that you go through. And this game takes those same elements and kind of notches them up a little bit. You have more variety on the like ships and crew and customizability, but also the like ways that they can overlap or interact is pretty massive. And I think the game just feels less capriciously random than FTL could feel at times. On the higher difficulties of FTL, it just seems like sometimes you'd have an impossible start, and this game gives you a little bit more foresight as to what type of risks you'll be taking. So they'll still be challenging, but you essentially get to choose like the lesser of two evils in your mind, which I think they're often very well balanced, where one is like you're going to have to face a lot of enemies, but there's not going to be a huge amount of, say, environmental hazards. But in another one, your enemy count or like what your objectives are easier in theory, but there's all of the, there's a like more difficult map to traverse, or these much more difficult like environmental hazards are a part of it. And trying to achieve, the other thing too, is it really rewards completing bonus objectives. And it's, I think it's hard to beat the game without successfully completing at least half of the bonus objectives provided to you, because then you just don't have enough like equipment or points to spend towards investing in your team before the final battle, which is very hard. Almost, there's very few times that I've gone into the final battle and I haven't had like a mech close to death, or at least put in like super dire circumstances, if not just outright like lose a pilot or a mech. It's a game that definitely forces loss upon you in the same way as FTL, but it because you have more prediction, there's less room for like accidental error or mistakes. I don't know. I feel more incentivized to roll with the punches as well, as opposed to FTL, where I'm just like, well, this is bullshit. I didn't mean to click that door open and, you know, like suffocate my entire crew.
Yeah, that happens on occasion.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot think I have a human in my crew of otherwise
all rock people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say like, if you enjoy FTL, then this game should be like a definite pickup. I don't know which one is better. I know for me, my preference lies to this game. But that's also because there are other roguelikes I like better than FTL as well. I played some more of the Outer Worlds, but at this point, especially where we're at time-wise, I'm so close to finishing, I feel. So I want to like wrap it up if I can before I talk about it.
Wait, you haven't beat it yet?
It's a long game.
I don't know. It's a 12-minute game. It's a 12-minute game.
I've seen that it can be beaten in 12 minutes, but in order to prevent spoilers, I have not watched that video yet.
Oh, don't worry. It doesn't spoil anything. It spoils the very, 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 very end.
Okay.
I'm guessing with one of the choices that you get.
Yeah.
But besides that, it's quite literally just running past things. And so, you know that key that you have to steal from the first, like when your ship gets impounded,
yeah,
that place, that thing that you have to get from inside the safe,
mm-hmm,
like the person literally specced themselves out to be able to just steal it immediately.
Yeah. I
it's just like, oh, well, that's going to save you time.
Yeah, that is going to save you a lot of time. I would say that actually the one thing to note about Outer Worlds that is especially relevant to what Neil was talking about earlier with Death Stranding, this is a game that makes me feel a lot more empowered to not be a completionist on. Am I still following sort of a completionist mentality? Yes. But did I see just like what the consequences were if I shot this guy who seemed sketchy in the face and like essentially skipped a companion quest? I did. And I think if I were to play in the future, I would definitely follow through on the decision to just shoot this guy in the face and tell my companion, like, you don't like it, deal with it, because you're my worst crewmate anyway. It's been very good. It's definitely a game where I feel like if you really want to delve into the role-playing and you feel like your character would not be Mr. Helpful doing every single side quest, I definitely feel like the game gives you the tools to feel comfortable with like leaving behind tasks and side quests and like companion missions that you're not interested in.
Would you say that maybe this game has some Mass Effect vibes to it? Because you said crew member.
Oh, I get definite Mass Effect vibes from it. I like it. I like it a lot, maybe because it does the things that I enjoyed about Mass Effect, especially Mass Effect 2, a lot. Although I don't think I need to finish crew member side quests to get them to be loyal enough that they don't die during my final mission against the Reapers.
Yeah.
I do feel compelled for like most of my companions. It's like, I want to fill out this side quest for you because it seems like you'd get some character growth. And I feel compelled, like, I feel as a character and as a person, like, I want to help you reach, like, attain that level of growth.
I hope it turns out that for anyone you don't get their companion quest done, that they end up dying while infiltrating some last boss area.
You do have a companion who's just a cleaning robot who's been modded to shoot like acidic cleaner on things, and I don't know how you like. I don't think there's any developing his role further than what he has, but he is a delightful companion with your dumbest human companion, because the dumb human companion always seems to like have conversations with the robot, and the robot's just like giving out slogans or pre-programmed responses, and the dumb human is just taking it on like it's a perfectly reasonable conversation. Really, really good pairing. Everybody else hates the robot. They shit talk it. Well, not everyone, but most everyone else I have just shit talks the robot. They're like, stop stealing my shit. And the robot's essentially saying like, giving little quips about how it's just cleaning and performing its program duties. Meanwhile, you have your dunce of the squad like become best bros with the cleaning robot. The dialogue's great. It's got really, I think the character writing is just phenomenal. It's very, very good. Super unique and diverse cast characters that I actually care about.
I can dig it. Well, soup's done?
Yeah, soup's on.
Sweet. It was good playing with you guys.
Until yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Comments, questions, any sort of listener feedback, send us an email at podcast@fancyramen.com.
Don't hesitate to comment to your friends and family to download the app on most podcast apps.
Yeah, Thanksgiving is coming up. Have all of your family and friends put their phones in the middle of the table so as to not distract from like good, meaningful conversation. And while they're enjoying one another's company, subscribe each one of them to the Fancy Ramen podcast against their will. That's what I'll be doing at my dinner table. Twitch TV, you can find us at www.twitch.tv, Fancy Ramen TV. Cookie Skimilk, CUKISKMILK, and Jay Frey all day.
All day?
Yep. You can watch our buddy John play some video games.
Vidya.
Vidya.
Right. Sweet.
Have a great week, everybody.
Yeah.
Bye.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Merry Thanks Christmas.